Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. David Carey is here with us once again. Good afternoon to you, David.
Hi, Sean. Well done to that teacher, by the way.
Yeah,
Very well done.
We did an item on that earlier on.
Yeah.
And on selective mutism. And again, we got a lot of texts and people saying, well, that's just shyness.
No.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same. No.
Has David any tips on getting a 3.5-year-old boy to wear an eye patch? I assume this comes from a family of pirates.
I
want that young fellow to
threaten to take away the parrot that's on his shoulder and he'll wear the patch. Funny you should ask, because when I was 5, I had to wear an eye patch.
Ah.
But I had no choice because my mother was a strong personality and made me wear the eye patch, and that was that.
Mm.
Now, with 3.5, it's a little bit difficult because, of course, they want to take it off. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, talk to your ophthalmologist or optician or whoever it is that has suggested the child wear an eye patch and see if it needs to be on 24 hours a day or if you can gradually get him over a period of a week or two to wear the eye patch for longer periods of time using some incentive or reward system for him.
Mm.
You might have to actually set a kitchen timer, for example. And I mean, I don't know how often or how strong the refusal is, so it's difficult to say. If the little boy absolutely cannot tolerate the eye patch, maybe it's an irritant to him.
Mm.
Maybe the adhesive, if there is any, is extremely uncomfortable. Maybe when it's removed, it doesn't feel right pulling it off. I don't really know. So I would suggest gradually increasing the amount of time using a little incentive and reward system. Probably you'll be able to reintroduce it to the extended time that's necessary for medical reasons over a period of a week or two.
Yeah, I imagine there's just physical difficulties with getting a 3.5-year-old to wear something easy to rip off.
Very easy to rip off and probably very uncomfortable. And maybe he or she doesn't really understand why they're even wearing it.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if you decorate it a little bit and make it look a little attractive and give him maybe let him or herself decorate it and give them a mirror so that they can see themselves in their wonderful, new, interestingly designed eye patch, maybe having several of them that they can keep redesigning.
Yeah, you could put a fake eye in it and all sorts of stuff.
You could do all kinds of weird and crazy things with it, and it should be up to the child. I think you can help the little 3.5-year-old adjust to it. It's difficult.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, there's a kind of dignity issue here.
You
don't want to look different
than
other kids the same. I remember being very self-conscious of my eye patch. It didn't help my vision at all, by the way. Back in the day, that's what they really recommended. If you had a weak eye, now, and
it was
I'm
to
not
correct
talking
it,
about muscular,
yeah.
they
yeah.
thought, you can improve the vision by patching the good eye and forcing the bad eye to do all the work. Well, it didn't work that way, but now these days children wear eye patches for all kinds of different reasons. So why not wear one yourself once in a while with your child?
That's an idea. Huh? You can have eye patch night.
You can have eye patch night. You can have pirate night.
Mm.
There's a lot of fun things you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, you often hear, for example, of people who are undergoing chemotherapy and they shave their head or they lose their hair. And everybody else in the family does the same thing, shaves their head, you know?
Mm.
There's a lot of ways around this. Force, power isn't going to work.
Yeah, of course. Now, I think they know that themselves. If anyone else has any suggestions, actually,
please let us know.
Welcome. Yeah. Tony says, try drawing his favorite cartoon characters on the patch. It worked for us.
Yeah, there you go.
Now this question, I kind of suspect this may be quite common. Can you ask David about a 16-year-old boy who's given up all his friends and just wants to be with his girlfriend? He's completely isolated himself and so has she. They've been going out for a while, but it seems to be getting intense with them and they don't need anybody else. We sense she's becoming very controlling over him too. As you can imagine, we're very concerned. Can you advise?
Ain't love grand?
Yeah.
Isn't it just the best? Total infatuation. The center of your own personhood is placed in the center of another.
Mm.
And Lawrence Durrell once said and wrote in a book, a city becomes a world when one loves one of its inhabitants.
Mm.
And so here's your young 16-year-old boy infatuated, and the girl has become a world. Well, of course, eventually his world may break.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Some of these things last, but let's be realistic. I think you need to talk to him a little bit and let him know that it isn't the best thing to abandon all his friends for the girl. You know that she's a good and wonderful source of enjoyment and warmth and love in his life. I would say that to him in whatever language you want to express it with. In other words, value the relationship the way he values it.
Yes.
But remind him also logically, and at age 16, perhaps he can key into some of this, that if you abandon all your friends and you refuse their calls and don't go out with them, eventually the phone calls, there aren't phone calls anymore. The social networking cues aren't going to come anymore.
Yeah.
And he could be quite isolated. And that to place all of your life in the hands of one other human being is in a way burdensome to them ultimately.
Mm.
Now, maybe he won't understand that. You're worried that she's controlling. Well, maybe he doesn't perceive it that way. And it could be that you're kind of projecting your own fears and worries about your son onto her and a bit demonizing her a little bit. Then again, she may be controlling.
There's not a lot you can do about it either way. But you can imagine, like, you know, he gets up in the morning and the mother says, put on a shirt. And he says, no, I'm not going to put on a shirt. But then the girlfriend turns up and says, put on a shirt. He puts on a shirt. And so the mother thinks, oh, she's controlling him.
Yes, in a way.
I can't. But I think you're right there. It's very important not to imply to them that somehow this relationship is just a teenage crush and it's not important.
Gosh,
because that's only going to make things worse.
No, that's not good, because young love in the teenage years is a rehearsal for mature love, whatever mature love is.
Yeah.
And so it's good to value it and recognize that for him, it's extremely important. Now, you want to have some controls and limits around it as well also, because 16 is a bit young to be getting involved into complete and utter infatuation, including physical intimacy. Mm. So let's hope that you have reasonable rules and expectations in the house about how to put some limits around their relationship. But you can't forbid it. You need to value it, recognize that it's important to him and probably to her also, by the way. And I wonder if she's doing the same thing.
Yeah, almost certainly. Almost certainly she has parents who are equally concerned.
I would bet, yeah. So ring up the other parents maybe, if you know who they are, and have a chat about this.
Mm.
It can be controlled. It's hard, though. Young love is fraught with all the difficulties of mature love without the reasoning power.
Yes. Though someone says, I married my 16-year-old boyfriend. The only thing he didn't give up for me was the GAA. A more powerful force than love,
yes,
if there ever was one.
The most all-controlling force in the world, yeah. You see, and it is. There's a lot of people out there who married their young love and lived happily ever after.
Indeed.
It's not uncommon.
No. Someone's texting in to say, try duct tape. I'm not too sure if that's for the 16-year-olds or the eye patch. Either way, it's not a great suggestion, I must say. I have a 12-year-old son who says no to everything in respect of joining anything sport-related. He's struggling at school with socializing and therefore getting into trouble and acting the clown. Unfortunately, the boys in his class constantly tell him he's stupid, and it does not help that he has difficulty with reading. It has been suggested he join a sport or activity, but he says no every time. He has a younger brother, and they get on very well. We do a lot of work on reading at home, and he is a kind, caring child, but can get angry when things don't go his way. And the same in school when he does participate and the others don't stick to the rules. I'm really worried because he'll start secondary school in 2017, and I want him to start well. Is there anything I can do to help improve his socializing skills and get him on board?
Well, contrary to popular belief, sport is not the answer to all life's dilemmas.
Mm.
Some young lads and some young girls don't have an interest in it. I'd like to know from this parent what he is interested in.
Yes.
Now, we do have room in this world, I think, still, Sean, I could be wrong on this, for solitary, contemplative, and meditative human beings who don't have a need to be social butterflies, who don't have a need to be out there all the time, laughing and chuckling and joining in on activities. And I'm wondering how happy this young boy is in his own skin. Now, something leaps out here. Other children are calling him stupid.
Yeah.
That's called bullying if it's happening a lot.
Yeah.
That needs to be addressed, because if that's going on, you can be sure that the root of some of his supposed difficulties lie there in the fact that school has become a very difficult and challenging and probably unhappy place. He has a reading difficulty. He's being jeered about it. That is absolutely unforgivable and should not be allowed in any classroom. Now, we create as much as possible a happy, safe, and harmonious environment in our classrooms where all feel valued and welcome and can make any contribution, even a daft contribution, without derision and ridicule. So I would say to parents, number one, tackle this issue. Number two, look at the reading difficulty. If he's a slow reader, what's being done to help him? Is he getting any learning support service in school? He doesn't want to play sports. Well, don't try to make him play sport. What is he interested in? Facilitate and encourage that. Mm-hmm. He's a kind and caring child, gets angry when things don't go his way. Well, don't we all?
Yeah.
How angry does he get?
Now, maybe. In fairness, they do say sport or activity.
Yeah, well,
I would guess that maybe there's a confidence issue here, that he doesn't have that many friends, he feels isolated, and he doesn't even want to try anything.
Well, you know, if you're having difficulty in any area of academics and you're being jeered constantly for it, your confidence is going to plummet.
Yeah.
And therefore, the risk-taking factor in getting involved in any activity, including just general socializing, is high because you're constantly projecting out on the world the fear that someone is going to ridicule you or that you'll do something stupid and foolish and look inferior in someone else's eyes. So all this needs some attention. Does the boy need some kind of professional help? I don't think so. What's needed is intervention at school level here right now, and some chat and conversation with him about why he's so hesitant to get involved in socializing activities.
We did have a question in about this 12-year-old whose parents are trying to encourage him to do sport or some other activity. He says no to everything. Someone suggested, tell him to join Scouts. I was like that young lad. It changed my life. It's even good for introverts. It's active and challenging without the competitive edge. On the subject of the 3.5-year-old who has to wear an eye patch, I had to wear an eye patch in junior infants and hated every second of it. I couldn't understand why I was being purposely blinded by my parents as my eyesight in the visible eye was rubbish. I couldn't see the lines in my copybook properly and the teacher didn't understand. Eventually, frequent nosebleeds meant I couldn't keep it on anyway and stopped wearing it. God. I still remember feeling so blind and disoriented in it. Says this doctor.
Well,
really, Mike, that's a tough one. But one assumes that it's done for more reasonable reasons nowadays. I used to work in an optician's. You can get nice patterned patches for kids online. Or also, if he or she wears glasses, there are fabric ones you slot over the glasses so they are occluding vision but not stuck to the face. Someone else has something similar. There's a cold sleeve that will cover the lens, the glasses. They can be ordered online. They have Spider-Man ones, etc. Our 3-year-old didn't want a patch either, but we started by putting the patch on his glasses lens and gradually talking to him about putting straight over his eye. He wears it no problem now, just a thought, says Grania. And finally, Niall McCaffrey says, say hello to David. He worked with my mom, Helen, many years ago in Froebel College. Great to hear him sounding so well.
Niall, thank you so much. I remember your mom so well, and I can honestly say to you that nearly at least once a month I think of her. Helen McCaffrey was one of the art lecturers at the Froebel College of Education. Her legacy lives on in the form of thousands of primary school teachers who are out there working with thousands of children, bringing to life the methods and the love of art and creation that Helen McCaffrey gave to them. Niall, thanks. It's great to hear from you. And I always remember your mom.
Yeah, of course, this is a common thing, David, with contributors to the show, that we get texts in about, I saw them, I met them, and so next week it'll be, you know, why were you wandering out of Peter's pub at 1:30 in the morning?
It wasn't me. It was my evil twin, Carl.
My almost 10-year-old son gets really angry at the way I eat, sniff, lick my lips, clear my throat, etc. I realize it may be a condition called misophonia. The thing is, he mostly directs his anger at me and occasionally at one of his two sisters. He was in his grandparents' house last weekend without me, and seemingly there were no problems at all at the dinner table, and he sat for ages instead of his usual running off as soon as he's finished. He also has some unreasonable anxieties, like obsessive worrying about a drawing of a fire engine, which he ripped up saying he can't draw one. He's a lovely, gentle, caring boy. He's always so apologetic after these outbursts. I've tried to tell him that I understand that he can't help these annoyances and they are not his fault, but I worry for his self-esteem. He also has dyspraxia and dyslexia and is finding school tough this year. To add to the stress, his twin sister almost preempts his meltdowns and has started to try to stop him coming places with us in case he kicks off. Crikey.
Good Lord in heaven. Well, little sister needs to be put in her place. She's no business trying to usurp his position in the family or be his parent. He should be her brother. And that's the way it is. So you deal with her very firmly, and let's draw a line in the sand there. Misophonia, miso, I hate. And obviously, I hate sound. Is this genuinely a case of misophonia? Hard to say, because it seems to be almost exclusively confined to Mummy.
Yeah.
And it certainly didn't appear when he was spending the entire weekend with loving Granddad and Nana. Now then again, Granddad and Nana may be so overwhelmingly loving that the distress caused by the sound of eating assuages, and he just doesn't perceive it as much. This young fellow also has, dyslexia and dyspraxia, if that isn't a double whammy. School is a hard time for him. He's 10. This reminds me of the 12-year-old. Who has a reading difficulty that we were just talking about. So there's a lot of stress in his life. Don't know exactly what's going on, why it's confined to Mom. Maybe you're the safe person that he can discharge some of his tension.
Yeah.
You know? What do they say? You always hurt the one you love, you know? And so maybe that's what's going on here. Sit down and talk to him. Tell him you care for him, you love him. And, you know, it's difficult. Just reassure. Find out what's going on in school now. How badly is he actually struggling here? It's good that you tell him that you understand, because it's important that he knows someone really understands. Little sister can't preempt the meltdowns.
Mm.
She should butt out.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, that she says, the thing is, he mostly directs this anger at me and occasionally at one of his two sisters.
Yeah.
I assume the sister he directs it at is the twin sister.
Probably.
So your thesis is, because of course she would be the closest one to him.
Yeah, exactly. And she's trying to step in and be Mommy and or Daddy here and control little brother. And it's probably unpleasant because for her, when she's out with Mom and Dad and if they're going out to a restaurant or McDonald's or something, he is kicking up and having a tantrum. I think the best thing to do, if he is acting up in a restaurant or out in public, or even home, remove him from the table just for a brief period of time and say, now calm down a little bit. When you're ready and can use your words, we'll talk about it and see how that goes.
If it is misophonia, though, does he need treatment?
There is almost no treatment for misophonia, unfortunately. Oh. Now, what typically is done is a reduction of anxiety and stress levels through the use of relaxation exercises, breathing exercises. Sometimes biofeedback can be very helpful. You want to tone down the nervous system.
Mm.
Misophonia, when it's in extreme, most exaggerated form, can actually induce rages and violent behavior. Now, you don't see that very often. It's uncommon. We've talked about it on the show before, misophonia. It usually isn't selective, though.
It's usually pervasive.
In other words, anytime you're around someone who's making the sounds of eating, it induces extreme discomfort. The thing to do is to recognize that the discomfort may always be present, but the loss of control is not going to always be present. And that's what you have to work on. Not the fact that, okay, it hurts your ears, it is painful to you when someone's eating and you hear the sounds, but what you can't do is act like this. Get up, go away from the table, come back in 5 minutes when you're a little calmer and see how it works out.
Mm.
So that's probably the best way forward for this young fellow. But I'm really wondering, there's this obsessive worrying, there's the dyspraxia, the dyslexia, there's a lot of stress in his life.
God, the poor little fellow.
And maybe that needs some attention.
A couple more suggestions for the eye patch. There's a website called eye2direct.com. eye2direct.com. Another one is myeyepatch.co.uk. And someone says, this is referring back to the 12-year-old we were talking about. I never wanted to be part of a team or play football, but I excelled at activities in which I relied on myself, such as archery, martial arts, music, art, through school and college and after and in my 20s. One evening when my mother was dragging me to welcome the local GAA team home after winning the county final, I asked no one had ever come out to welcome me home when I set Irish records and won Irish and international medals. And she said, well, that's your fault for not wanting to be a team player. You can't win. Indeed. You're marching to a different drum.
So true.
So true. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.